Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our continuing work with the science of triangles. You find here represented all kinds of great beings as circles and as triangles. So our task when we deal with the science of triangles is to discover from whence the major energies are coming, that we adapt on our own little level to somehow share with each other and improve the human situation. If we can do that, and well, it certainly seems to need improvement at the moment, I must say. But we're in for quite a ride, I think, over the next number of years as we prepare under Pluto and under Vulcan, those first ray planets, for putting into motion of the real externalization, followed by the reappearance of the Christ. We are working here with it is our 79th program, and we're still on that same page, because these are ray triangles, which are of the utmost importance. There's so much of what we do which is a study of the science of the seven rays, you know. So we've been working on the, and they should be memorized, I imagine, on the three zodiacal constellations and their concentrated signs, which convey the seven rays to us here. Now, whether that would be the case for all planets, I cannot say. And fortunately, we don't have to say. But it is so for us, and a fifth ray triangle is coming into power increasingly with the age of Aquarius, which transmits the fifth ray, accompanied by a cycle of the seventh ray. Now, it's really an Aquarian time because a great Platonic year ruled by Aquarius is on its way. And that's a 25,000-year period, somewhere between 25 and 26,000 years. And I suppose one of the big questions is, will that cycle be also accompanied by a larger cycle of the seventh ray? We know that the smaller equinoctial cycle is accompanied by a, it's sometimes used as a 2,500-year seventh ray cycle. And it could be anything. I mean, it could be Aquarius first ray, Aquarius second ray, you know, and so forth. The accompanying cycle is independent, except, of course, it has its own order, but it's independent of the sign of the zodiac, which it is accompanying. So, there's much to this science of cycles that's very interesting. I'm sure that as we learn about the methods by which the hierarchy plans, we'll be quite amazed. This is a planet. In order to get the best out of our planet, we have to plan according to the cycles. I just want to just take me a second here. Just welcome you. There are, let's see, all right. So Anna, hi, and Annette and Brennan, and Catherine, Frederick, Ishtar, and Joe, Karen, Leslie, Martha, and Martin, Miro, Welcome, and Natni, and Nelly, and Nesa. You're down a couple of times, it looks like. But anyway, welcome both of you. Risto and Stephen. Tia and Vera, Walter and Zenaide. And over here on the right-hand side, keeping us honest, we have Joe and Michael Stacy and Tuya's giving a hand here as well. Well, our work is with the sixth ray today. And I think what we have to notice is that three of the signs of the zodiac, let's see if I can get this down to an appreciable, that the three signs of the zodiac are all on the mutable cross. Now, even though the mutable cross is, or sometimes called common cross, seems to have to do with an earlier stage of evolution, there's another way to look at this, whereas the cardinal signs have the most to do with evolution at first, and then followed by the discipleship cross, which is mutable, and then followed by the cross of initiation, which is cardinal. So there are different ways of working individually with people, but in general, the mutable cross takes us to the threshold of being able to say we're entering the fifth kingdom of nature and the kingdom of souls. And Pisces is especially that way. And there are many sixth ray souls who are awaiting transition. They will either be out of incarnation for quite some time, but we don't know how long, or they will be making their transition onto the second ray and even onto the third ray. You know, some of them become these theoretical idealists, and others become more the lovers of humanity and the healers and so forth. There is a direct line from the sixth ray to the second ray, and that will involve Pisces and Jupiter, and also, since 2 times 3 equals 6, as the Tibetan is fond of pointing out, he says there's a special relationship here. The relationship between the first ray and the second, you know, twice one is two, between the second ray and the fourth, twice two is four, and then between the third ray and the sixth ray, twice three is six. So these numerological relationships, I would say, are very important for us to cognize, and there will be lines of relationship which we can detect strictly on the basis of the numbers. Though there is the popular numerology, of course, and maybe something can be derived from it, but DK gives an example of esoteric numerology, how it works, and he compares in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, he compares the word for, F-O-U-R, to force, F-O-R-C-E, and derives some interesting ideas from that kind of comparison. At least he gives you an example of how it works. Now, the sign at present through which the greatest amount of the sixth ray of devotion, of idealism, and sometimes called the ray of abstract idealism, is Sagittarius. And, you know, there's quite a bit of a debate in astrological circles as to whether the rising sign of the United States is Gemini or whether it is somehow Sagittarius. And they go back to the signing of the Declaration of Independence and some variations in questions as to when it was finally signed, and quite a few very competent astrologers do believe that it is Sagittarius. You know, people, it's a point of migration. People traveled afar to reach this destined goal. It's basically a very strongly religious country, and we see right now the big battle going on between the sixth ray souls and those who are older a bit, perhaps, and on the second ray, and we find a kind of well, not so latent anymore, a kind of fanaticism in the American psyche, and we find even that Washington, D.C., I believe, is ruled by Sagittarius in its personality aspect. So that sign is definitely there. But anyway, this sort of spirit of adventure and, you know, heading to the West and the whole idea of new lands to be explored, you know, never mind the fact that they are being taken from their original occupants under terribly unfair circumstances. You know, so there's a lot of, well, there's a lot of misfortune associated with that expansive Sagittarian kind of impulse. But, you know, it has been the way. Sometimes we don't understand Sanat Kumara. Well, sometimes we just don't understand Sanat Kumara. And those lords of the first ray who are in charge of the racial form. I mean, here we are as internal beings. We're constantly being recycled in different races and different groups and sub-races. And we spend time in every race and sub-race, it does seem. And sometimes the racial forms no longer are needed. They have to be outgrown. I'm trying to think about some of the early Lemurian forms. We don't see them anymore, do we? We just see some kind of vestige. And even with early Atlantean forms, we don't see them anymore. The people inside are the same, you know, but they're in a different vehicle. They're in a different vessel. And sometimes there appears to be a very unfortunate, you know, almost merciless situation that we've all been through. I'm sure all of us have been the perpetrators and all of us have been the victims of these, you know, sub-racial fading out of a particular type of form, and yet the inner human being remains the same. Anyway, Sagittarius is that sign, which, if followed, and you know, it plays into the present even American election, interestingly enough. It's kind of the, in one respect, it's kind of a shoot from the hip attitude. Later, of course, it becomes very thoughtful and philosophical, but the moon of the present occupant of the White House is the reckless Sagittarian moon. However, for a challenger, Sagittarius is the rising sign. And that augurs, I think, rather better for clear vision. Well, so there we are with the sixth ray of devotion, idealism, and let's call it abstract idealism. I'll just, you know, just for fun. Well, maybe it'll be fun for me. I hope it's for you too. I'm going to go over here and read some of the names, which I should have been doing this all along, really. But in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, let's say, I don't know, somewhere around page 70. Oh, that was two, volume two. That's not correct. It has to be volume one, doesn't it? So let's see if I'm somewhere in the neighborhood. Yeah, zeroed in on the fourth ray, and here's the fifth. And the names are very Martian and will give you kind of an idea of how the sixth ray operates. Of course, you know, but it can be significant when we look at whether it correlates with Virgo, Sag, or Pisces. The negator of desire, the one who sees the right, and even the right wing at this time is connected with the sixth ray, the visioner of reality, if it goes so far, the divine robber, I suppose, robbing form of its interest. We can meditate on that one. The devotee of life, finally, the devotee of the monad. And this is interesting, the hater of forms, because it suggests abstraction. The warrior on the march, very Martian. The sword bearer of the Logos, again, a very sacrificial and Martian kind of function. The upholder of the truth, you know, those who are willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of truth. The crucifier and the crucified, well, karma works out, you know, so in the early days when there's less knowledge, there is an attack against all those who think differently. It happened in the Inquisition in Spain and Italy with both with six-ray souls, and it could happen where there are six-ray personalities too. The breaker of stones, I think it's kind of obscure, but it has something to do with breaking up concretion. The imperishable flaming one, so Martian, the one whom naught can turn, that straight line motion, which reeks not of the havoc it may cause, implacable, implacable ruler, cannot be brought into a condition of peace, the general on the perfect way. And here's what's interesting. Master DK tells us that our visions of the, whoopsie, sorry, of the Master Jesus are completely off, and that he is actually a great commanding general, not the sweet and suffering, lamb holding individual of people's fantasy. He was Joshua, the great general, and whether we believe he did right or wrong, and there's ways of looking at it both ways, he is the general, a commanding presence with piercing blue eyes, we're told, and the one who leads the 12. So there's some kind of again, the Martian leadership, and maybe the 12 here are the 12 planets or something like that. Well, you get an idea, don't you, of what it's like. He has not brought in the Neptunian quality too much. Later he talks about it, the sort of mystical passive attitude of the sixth ray, and maybe that fits more with Pisces to a certain extent and with Virgo. Now going back to where we are here, you know, it takes great, I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am. It takes a great devotion to see one's way through the gestation period and to the early raising of the child. And it is classic to think in terms of of parental devotion, and especially the mother's devotion, long lasting and consistent and without interruption, and caring about very much about the form, that which the mother archetypally produces. All of the six ray, even though the planets related, are not six-ray planets, they will travel through those planets. And that means that there will be a six-ray flow through Mercury, through the Moon and what it veils. It veils Neptune and Vulcan. And so there will be, especially through Neptune, there will be the six-ray flow. And Jupiter has that great enthusiasm that is connected with the sixth ray as well. But this is a long, long lasting devotion, and it holds the ideal so firmly in mind that it will do anything to achieve that ideal. And what we have here to achieve the ideal is purification. You know, Virgo, I was just reading where, well, we are all subject at a certain point to attacks from the left-hand path and from the brothers of darkness and the lords of materialism. You know, if you end up being a disciple of any kind that can be really used, you will experience those kinds of attacks at some point. But it is this dedication to purification which closes the door upon attack, usually does anyway. There are a number of ways to ward off these attacks, and he says, more and more, we will give you the methods of doing so. And that was written maybe 100 years ago. Okay, so when Alice Bailey first began to work with the Tibetan. But we know that this adherence to the idea of purification is so Virgoan, and it can be even a fanatical adherence. Now, one of the problems there is, of course, that people get so stuck on the on the purifications that are of a physical nature that they sustain those purifications overly long. And DK says they forget emotional loveliness, you know, and they forget a clear mind, which is so needed. But let's say that the sixth ray has a great tenacity connected with it. And this is very useful upon the path of probation. We're told the path of probation is ruled by the fourth ray of struggle and the sixth ray of devotion. So, you know, Virgo is cleaning up what is necessary. Now, eventually, it is a very wisdom-producing sign. Knowledge is produced by Taurus and wisdom by Virgo, and it's a deep, you know, the devotion doesn't have to be shown on the outside. It's a deep internal devotion. And out of that, along with Pisces, comes not my will, but thine be done. In other words, a kind of humility is found here. As well, the mystery of the Sphinx, part of it, the head of the woman, which I think in many respects represents the higher mind, and the body of the lion, the lower mind. So if you're on the path of probation or even on the path of discipleship, there's some kind of great commitment when you look at these two working together, Virgo and the sixth ray. Of course, it is the sign through which the maximum at this time of the second ray comes. And there can be, you know, there can be negative attitudes here as well. Obviously, you think that only your method, your religion, your philosophy, whatever it happens to be, is pure and acceptable, and you're very devoted to that entirely, and you have fanatical criticism for other approaches. That is also possible. But I think we get the idea of the commitment of the also of the soul to seeing through the development of the personality, seeing through it until it is accomplished. Devotion unto death. And this is interesting because the death we're talking about here is the return of the solar angel to its original source. Well, eventually to Sirius probably, but we're talking about Venus and the Sun. So a kind of death occurs with the destruction of the Temple of Solomon, and all that while, there has to be the ongoing devotion of the overseer, constantly rendering the alignment more and more pure, more and more unobstructed, until a glorification can occur, and we have the statement, which he tells us is the true mantra of Virgo, Christ in you, the hope of glory. So there's the dedication to achieving the glorification of the whole personality, if a real purity, and not necessarily fanatical purity, but a real purity can be achieved on all three levels. And there, in this sign, of course, is the great intelligence of Mercury and the form-building aspect of the Moon, veiling Vulcan for the etheric physical and Neptune for the astral body. And those two irrational aspects of man have to be kept in a state of purity. And we have also kind of an exaltation of Mercury relating to the Sun of Mind. So this is a method of achieving godliness on the physical plane. And finally, you know, if you look at the kind of dedication we've got the number six, we've got Jupiter ruling the monadic plane. We have Virgo associated with the divine builders of the monadic plane. And we have the ideal form in the monad, ruled by Jupiter, and it's on the sixth plane, six from below. So this is where numerical resonance comes in. The number six from below, Jupiter, the ruler of the monadic plane, Jupiter, the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, and Jupiter having that strong sixth ray, second ray content. It also has much of the seventh ray, of course. Now, it's so interesting to see that Jupiter is found as a ruler in every one of these sixth ray sources. We have Gemini substituting for Sagittarius when we're talking about the second ray. Jupiter technically does not rule Gemini, but it is strong in relation to Gemini because it's the second ray soul planet, and Gemini is the head of the cosmic Christ, and so a very second ray sign. With Sagittarius, I've gone through a little bit of that. It's the willingness to depart on a great adventure, which eventually will take us on the way of higher evolution. I mean, we're told, interestingly, that the third ray is the ray that rules the choice in Libra of which path you will take, which path you will return upon. And Jupiter is always the expander of rings pass not, and Mars is the courage thus to expand. The Earth is different because it contributes making the animal man into the angelic man. So the sacredness of Earth, the elemental Earth will be made into the sacred Earth. Sagittarius has a lot to do with that kind of upliftment of the entire planet. But this is an energy which is more outward in a certain way, and more burning, and more fanatical, we might say, the most fanatical indication. Interestingly, not only do Italy and Spain, the home of those inquisitorial efforts, have the sixth ray, soul, but Spain has the sixth ray personality, Italy has the sixth ray personality. I'm getting it wrong. Sagittarius is the personality sign of Italy. Gosh, how many times can I get it wrong? I'm getting it wrong. Sagittarius is the sixth, is the sign of the soul of Spain. Okay? A sixth ray Sagittarian soul. As for Leo is the soul sign for Italy, but it has a Sagittarius fourth ray personality. So not only is the sixth ray found prominently in the soul of both of those nations, but Sagittarius is as well. One ruling the personality of Italy, and the other ruling the soul, Spain. And so this is the huge battle going on right now, the crossing influences of Sagittarius and Aquarius, we might say, the crossing influences of the major sixth ray sign and the sign Aquarius into which we are entering, and the Martian attitude is prominent and dangerous. It is a warlike attitude, and although it does give courage, it also reduces thoughtfulness. And what's really interesting here is that the sacred planet Jupiter is put in the orthodox position, and the non-sacred planet Mars is put in the hierarchical position. So, but basically, if we were to analyze these carefully, they both are very important in conveying the expansiveness and the will to penetrate through the next ring pass knot, and thereby help to uplift the Earth from its elemental preoccupations, bringing it much closer to the Deva kingdom and the union with Venus. And by the way, regarding Venus, and it's not here listed, but it is the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray. So when you think about Venus, you sometimes think, well, where's the sixth ray? But in fact, on the monadic level, I think we will be finding that Venus, representing the solar plexus of our solar logos, has a very strong sixth ray, only it's a higher kind of sixth ray. In any case, there are two great journeys, and we're on one of them. It's called the Path of Initiation, and it will take us eventually to the monad and to the sixth level from below. But then begins the real journey on into the higher cosmic levels, the cosmic astral plane, the cosmic mental plane, depending on which path we're on. And although Libra rules that great decision, Sagittarius rules that one-pointed vision, which helps us break through the next ring pass knot and takes us on a tremendous journey to follow our inner ideal, you might say, to follow our inner ideal. So the major sign of the sixth ray Sagittarius. Now maybe you have that, and what we'll try to do also a little bit is look at a couple of combinations of the rising sign, sun sign, and moon sign in general, not in terms of what your chart actually is, because that would take a lot, that would take hours, to do that correctly. But at least we can look at some of these triangles in terms of the past, the present, and the future. Now, when it comes to Pisces, we've already established that Neptune is a planet of the sixth ray on its soul level. It has a second ray monad, and it's considered a special ruler of Pisces. Jupiter also has that enthusiasm which connects with the sixth ray, I do believe. And at one time I wondered whether the personality ray of Jupiter was not perhaps the sixth, with its soul being confirmed as the second, and maybe the seventh ray being prominent, at least on one of the monadic levels. But what about Pluto? Pluto, we're given only one ray. It's the first ray. And yet, Pluto is intimately connected with the solar plexus center. I wonder if I can find something here that talks about that. Let's just say the word is smoke, and there's only one. Oh, here it is. Two of the other non-sacred planets, Mars and Pluto, function in connection with the sacral center Mars. Yes, that makes sense, because Mars in general rules sex and is a lower turn of the spiral when it comes to in relation to the Earth. And the solar plexus Pluto, see that? The latter planet becomes active in the life of the man who is, quote, becoming alive in the higher sense. His lower nature passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto, which governs the lesser burning ground, in order that man may live in truth in the higher land of light. Well, very beautiful symbolic writing, but having to do, I think, with the way that the solar plexus is involved as a clearinghouse for the ascending energies. And the realm is the realm of Hades, and Hades pretty much was the astral plane over which Pluto ruled. So when warriors, let's say, were killed in battle, they went to Hades under Pluto. It wasn't the hell of the Abrahamic religions. It was simply a more subtle world. I wonder if we do have anything here about Hades. No, we don't. Okay. That's not in the Tibetan's material, but why I'm bringing this up is that when we start to look at the other rays of Pluto, right now I think we have a personality ray, we may find a ray like the sixth ray, which connects it to the solar plexus center. So, Pluto does have something to do with that. Pluto has been active in so much death. When I look at some of the horoscopes of some of the real, criminals of the Second World War, they were born at a time when Neptune and Pluto were conjuncted. And Neptune and Pluto will be a tremendous solar plexus emphasis and will rule the astral plane, which follows the sending of many millions to their death. So it is death and the sixth ray and the astral plane are definitely related. Now, Pisces is interesting because, in terms of the sixth ray, because it is the transitional sign. In other words, as we are preparing to move off the normal cross, the common cross, on which we have found ourselves for so many millions of years, Pisces is the transitional sign by which we do that. It may be, and ultimately, the most powerful of all of the second ray signs, and the sign most associated with the Christ. I mean, he is associated, obviously, with Virgo, you know, born under the Virgin constellation, and with Gemini, the head of the cosmic Christ. But Pisces, in terms of the pervasive wisdom and the compassion and the power to save and identify with all humanity through saviorship, this is a cosmic decanate, and associated particularly with the Christ. So here we have again another sign connected with the monad and with the sacrificial journey. Now, what is the monad? You know, there are many things it is, but we can call it a Lord of ceaseless and persevering devotion. Now, there's our very high sixth ray. And that self-sacrificial attitude up on the sixth plane, you know, what am I talking about here? I'm talking about, all I got to do is find it. Here we are on the sixth plane. And we find that, of course, Virgo is there, but we find Jupiter, and we find the idea of, I leave the Father's home, Pisces. And turning back, I save. So we have the whole idea of the saviorship of the monad, which is a Lord of ceaseless and persevering devotion. Every one of us is that in our depth, ceaseless and persevering devotion. And notice here the numbers. If we count from below up, the number six is found here. So we definitely have to connect not only Jupiter, which rules Pisces, but Neptune, which in a special way rules Pisces. We have to connect them both with the monad and the monadic plane from which we began our great journey down into the depths of matter. And here, in a way, is a picture of our journey. We leave from this point and travel all the way, of course, it's usually described over here, but in a way, there are three different methods of traveling according to the aspects, the third aspect of divinity, the second, and the first, and the monad sponsors all of them. And we are the divine pilgrim, and we are on a big journey. Again, the sixth ray is the journeying ray, and we have made the turn and are meeting another aspect of the monad here on the higher mental plane. So the number six is appropriate for Pisces, and of course, again, it takes tremendous devotion to travel, let's say, that 25 million years. Somehow I'm thinking that 25 million is about the average duration of what it takes to move out of the animal kingdom, the third kingdom of animal man long ago, and pass through the human and into the kingdom of souls. So some people will do it much faster, and others may be slower, but I'm thinking that since 25 is a number connected with the fourth ray, and that, you know, that is coming from the theories of Stephen Pugh, who's given a lot of attention to these matters, coming from the fourth ray and the number 25 are connected. The fourth ray is mainly humanity's ray at the present time, and humanity is a member of the fourth creative hierarchy of monads. It's found on the expressing on the Buddhic or fourth level. So there is that sense that the fourth kingdom of nature is associated with the number 25. I mean, we do get, 2,500 years. We do get 250,000 years. We get 2,500 years, 25,000 years, all of these things associated with how man measures time. Okay, so Pisces, in a way, is both the beginning and the end. Now, it says, go forth into matter, and the sixth ray, desiring to do that, takes the plunge into matter. And eventually, you are released into Shambhala and released at the fifth initiation through Pisces. And, I also think that Pisces being the end, it is the end of what we call the strictly human demonstration. It takes us into the realm of the Chohan, who is an initiate of the sixth degree. They are no longer men, as are the masters, it is said. So when we finish mastership, which some take under the quality of Pisces, we are heading into a monadic demonstration. And we've already said Pisces and the sixth ray can be associated with the monadic plane. Well, we're going to know more about this when we find ourselves in an esoterically saved condition, and when we ourselves are the saviors of those who are up and coming, even now, as the Christ is our savior, not in the typical religious sense, but in terms of the great teacher and the one who restores us to our monadic integrity. There's so much about Pisces and the monad, because it detaches from everything and prepares. It's one of the signs of oneness, you might say, and on a very high level. And when you put Pisces and Aries together in the old days, you used to get one sign. It was the Alpha and Omega. Alpha, the first letter of the Greek alphabet, being Aries, and Omega, the last letter of the Greek alphabet, being Pisces. So it prepares us for devotion to a still higher objective, which will take us onto the cosmic astral plane, again the number six, right? These we have our earth astral plane, we have our systemic astral plane, and then we have something called the cosmic astral plane, and Pisces is directly connected with that great watery plane, the home of true love, different from the kind of love we have on the cosmic physical level. So it's a sign of beginnings, where you're just totally confused by all kinds of external influences and rather helpless, and where you just believe instead of know. And there are so many fanatical people who simply believe, and they don't even know why they believe. They don't really know. And they're willing to, again, take it as far as the death, their own death or the death of others, because of their beliefs. But later, identification and true release. Not everybody takes the fifth initiation under Pisces, mostly under Aquarius to become the world server, and a few under Pisces to become the world savior. And those have a special connection with Shambhala, which is a great saving source. When you look at Sanat Kumara, he is the archetype of world saviors, and the Christ lives in imitation of his Father in heaven. I think there's even a constellation. Is it the King Cepheus, the king in an associated constellation with Pisces? There's Andromeda, and there's the band of fishes, but there's Cepheus, the king. He stands for Sanat Kumara. So he stands for the ending in Shambhala according to the power of Pisces. So the sixth ray, in summary, the sixth ray can present a great problem as it is now because, as DK tells us, far more destruction can result from the fifth ray than sixth ray than from the first ray. And that may seem strange, but it's because the souls on the sixth ray tend to be younger, less experienced, and more willing to do what is not the product of clear thought. And we're witnessing that today. There's a huge division right now. The Christ says, I come to bring not peace, but the sword. And it's the sword of discrimination. And the discrimination is between the dweller on the threshold and the angel of the presence. And that humanity's angel and humanity's dweller are fighting it out right now. And to a certain extent, that is a battle between the second ray and the sixth ray. And, you know, Pisces is the sign of pralaya and death in the sense of ending old civilizations and ages and so forth. We're in the middle of that right now. There is something called the withering of the law, and we are passing through, in case it's not obvious to everybody on this earth, the possibility of the withering of the law and the institution of new laws. There's no way that we're going to avoid the pralaya of the Piscean period. We're in it. And the way this is working out, let's say, in the world at the moment, is that the United States, with all of its six-ray and six-ray souls, is the heir, has inherited, is the heir to the Piscean civilization. And it's withering in the old sense, and the need to establish some new possibilities is underway at this very moment, with much unpleasantness and much danger for the world. So if we know the esoteric causes of these in terms of this triangle, we're better off. There is religious fanaticism under Sagittarius. There is the withering of the law, and there under Pisces, the pralaya. And there is a kind of a sanctimonious belief under Virgo that only a particular narrow brand of fundamentalism is true in relation to God. And this is shared by other Abrahamic religions as well. Sixth ray danger, and yet sixth ray idealism, and a higher and more inclusive idealism may result. Okay, that's all that I'm going to say there. And maybe people have thoughts that they want to bring forward. And then if you do, we can try to look at them together. Maybe something was stimulated there. And of course, a few more people have joined us, and can't see them all here, but Rosanna and Stacia and Vera, you know, Zipporah, from the time I said hi. Okay, so it's your turn, and we'll take a look at it, and then maybe we will do one or two triangles that involve moon sign, sun sign and rising sign. As I say, in general, not necessarily that it tells everything about your chart, not at all, but at least it gives a trend of, I started with this, I moved to that, I moved to that, a very important triangle. Okay, Michael, if you can give us a hand.
Or I am looking for hands raised.
Okay.
And or comments, questions in the chat box. And people are working on it.
I'll bet if I know how to get a response. But I'm not going to do that yet. Is there anybody that would like to comment on your thoughts of this triangle in relation to the sixth ray? Admittedly, we're just going one line at a time at this time because these triangles are so important. And next week, we finish this series of ray triangles with the seventh ray, and we compare it with the first ray, you know. So this is number 79, and what day is it? 16th of September, and we're still literally on the same page, all of us together, and this will be the 23rd, and it will be an evening session. Okay, evening. And it will be p.m. So is there anybody that would like to say anything about their observations of the sixth ray in relation to these signs? Anybody?
Thank you, Vera.
Okay. Just quick thought. When you, Michael, said about the pralaya, which will be coming up at the end of the Piscean this period. Now, but it will not be the final one. It will be just partial. Oh. And my observation is that actually, yes, the ideologies are failing, or we can see through it. They were not sort of perfect. But the emphasis of today's people is still so much on the economy, which is form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm, yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah.
No, I believe it's so. No, of course, there are so many pralayas that lie ahead, and we are simply talking about the pralaya of the smaller Piscean age, and the pralaya of the sixth ray going out. Maybe, you know, we're not talking about universal pralaya. We're not talking about the solar systemic or planetary pralaya. This is just a smaller cycle of the disintegration of old forms which no longer serve the purpose. There are many, many ideals which were conceived in different times and under different circumstances. And they are too narrow. They no longer serve. They fall very short of the what's called the universal love of Aquarius and the ability to use the power of technology and the power of scientific magic to enhance the condition of humanity. So in a way, this first ray in Pisces, this Pluto thing, this dissolution under Neptune, the dissolving, all has to be swept aside, and its or their deficiencies have to be shown before people will be willing to drop them in this kind of quasi-pralaya to enter into a new values, new possibilities, new forms of relationship. So basically, it's clearing the deck for the newness of Aquarius and for the hierarchy, which is ruled by Aquarius, which for the first time in millions of years will be emerging to walk the earth with humanity. They had to retire, and it wasn't necessarily because that great war in Atlantis was lost. It's just that they estimated that humanity had to, in a way, go the slower path and find its own way, which it has been doing. The idea of giving humanity all the gifts of technology and things that we have long ago forgotten led to certain dangers that they didn't want to see repeated. That is my idea. So the forms indeed will change, the methods of relationship, and we'll be moving from a period of faith into a period of knowledge, and from a period of obedience to external authority into a period of obedience to one's own inner God, which will be proven to be imminent in the human being. Right now, DK talks about the vague concept of the imminence of God within the human being, and obviously that is not accepted so widely, and that will have to be proven. So we'll be standing much more on our own feet during the Aquarian Age, but at the same time, we'll learn how to work better in true group formation, which has not yet been raised to the proper level during the Age of Pisces. So many old forms into Pralaya swept aside.
Can you please give example of 2,000 years ago when there was ending of the Aries cycle and we were coming into Pisces, on some sort of historical events, how that was unfolding then?
I would like to be able to do that, but basically there was the leftover of the Age of Aries, which we find in the Jewish group and much emphasized in the Roman group as well. And then we have the coming in of the great planetary event there is not a conquering nation. You know, looking for the Messiah in those old days, you were looking for someone who would militarily raise Judea above their enslaved condition. But we had a whole new dispensation of love and wisdom and an inward movement that the kingdom of heaven is within and not in terms of outer conquest. There, and that has set the tone for much of Christianity, at least the more legitimate kind. Now, it just so happens that I don't know how it happened, but that Christianity became a scorpionic religion. And so the ancient warfare continued, and also Islam has a very strong scorpionic, somewhat death orientation, those two, even more than Judaism, at both of them, more oriented towards scorpionic death in Judaism. But at the same time, the whole idea of the savior of man and the principle of sacrifice under Pisces became dominating. Now, you know, if I were a historian, maybe I could, you know, go back and find some of these events that indicated that. With the dissolution of the Roman, there's always an overlap, you know, with the dissolution of the Roman Empire, the decline and fall, so to speak, the true emphasis upon Christianity became pronounced. But it was in a purer form at the time of Jesus with the Essenes and those who really understood the inner life. So I would say that man became, in a way, more subjective and realizing that he has to cultivate, you know, the great war is within himself. And I think that certain orders emerged, which which cultivated that. And I think that was not only in Christianity. I think Buddhism has a lot of this as well. And there's one point where he tells us that Buddhism is connected with the sixth ray, at least as it's usually practiced. So a more Neptunian sixth ray came in for many people, looking to, to make contact with the higher worlds through deep meditation. And a certain group of beings connected with Neptune, which were very high mystics, were released into the whole thing. This is a lot different from Mars, sixth ray, implacable, fiery, conquering, trampling over. This is a different approach entirely.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the plunge, as you often do. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Anything else, friends?
No other hands raised, no other questions, comments written in the chat box. As I'm looking at these three signs, I see that they can be seen as a great many types of triangles, depending upon where the moon, the sun, the rising sign may be placed. And it can you can have the moon in any of the three, the sun in any of three, the rising sign in any of the three, but you can also double up.
Yes, you can. And triple up.
And triple up. And you can also do those triangles in terms of placement in the decanates of the signs.
Yes, if we want to get quite meticulous, we can analyze in that way. You know, there are a lot of ways to look at this. If we look at Pisces as the moon sign, escapism is a problem, and an excessive kind of passivity and a vulnerability, we might say, a retreat from reality, a retreat from the cold, hard facts of living. And now then we could, with that moon sign, we could make Sagittarius the sun sign, and that would, if the person makes progress, it would take him out of that attitude of subjectivity and, sort of pulling back and being super sensitive, and send that person out on some sort of adventure or quest or expansion or new territory. And then if Virgo is the ascending sign, it is also, because these are in square and opposition relationships with each other, aren't they? I mean, Sagittarius and Pisces are square, Sagittarius and Virgo are square, Virgo and Pisces are opposites. So the rational faculty for many people, it depends on their level of evolution, but the rational faculty would enter in, because Virgo is one of those very intelligent signs when it comes in under Mercury. And so there would be, the tendency, depending on the ray, to examine closely what the new environment into which Sagittarius has taken us, and to somehow interiorly come into a state of mental control. And of course, it depends on the level of the individual, but to cultivate the again an internal attitude of the inner Christ. In other words, to begin to really, you may be the adventurer. I'm remembering that movie called The Mission, and probably some of you have seen it. It was, I think the Portuguese people kind of ran roughshod over the native South Americans and generally they felt they had the right to do that. But there were others that deplored the way that the people of South America, often of the Indian cultures, were being treated. And they repented and tried to make a better situation out of it all. So, you know, there's a certain brash going forward with Sagittarius. It's a great constellation, and it's actually a fairly warlike constellation, very brilliant in the sky. But Virgo calls for internal self-examination regarding the new environment into which the adventure has taken us. So it's, again, a more interior attitude. Now, we could switch the whole thing around. We could leave Pisces as the moon, that difficult, vulnerable, drug-related, I must say, escapist Pisces moon. A lot, you know, some people escape into, there's all substance abuse, and Virgo may not help that at all. Virgo is also given to that. But if Sagittarius were the rising sign, there's a way of pulling out of that preoccupation and really expanding one's horizons and really taking an adventure that would expand the ring pass knot in a spiritual way. So there's a difference between having Sagittarius as the sun sign, which is more personal, and having it as the rising sign, because it will reach higher spiritually. And, you know, Virgo will have its usual meticulous kind of devotions that have to be widened, broadened under Sagittarius. It's very interesting. Sagittarius can be very narrow and fanatical in one way, but it can be very broad and expansive, very Jupiterian in another way. So the spiritual expanding of the horizon will be important. And we could, you know, we could do that. We could make every one of these the moon position, as you were saying, Michael. We could make every one of them the sun position or the rising sign position, and we could double up. And when you double up, you know, you have a lower expression of the sign, and you have a higher expression of the sign. And the two can be very different. For instance, with Pisces, escapism is one thing, and spiritual responsibility is another way to interpret Pisces. I saw in the chart of, at least the chart I use, of the Dalai Lama, that the Saturn in Pisces, I think, was the mark of his spiritual responsibility. And he certainly has upheld that very, very, very strongly. And then finally, you know, if let's say you're quite a high initiate, and Pisces is your rising sign, and it doesn't mean that because Pisces is your rising sign that you are a high initiate, but just suppose you were beyond the third degree and Pisces was your rising sign, then the whole idea of a compassionate salvation and bodhisattvaship and some kind of sacrifice for the welfare of all would be dominating. And, you know, the sixth ray is the ray of sacrifice, and Pisces is a great sign of sacrifice. It would be completely different than the kind of initial retreat and vulnerability we have with the Pisces moon. So there are many combinations and permutations that we can work on here. Okay, is there anybody who would like to offer a sun, moon, and rising sign combination who has not done so before? Remembering, this is not an interpretation of your chart. It's just an indication. I move from this to this to this in a generic manner. You know, Michael, you could tell yours Gemini, Gemini, Gemini.
Yes, but it's different decanates for each of those.
Okay, if you want to be discriminative in that way.
Yeah, and, so,
and,
you know.
And whether you're coming or going. You know,
yes, first decanate is rising, and second decanate is sun, and third decanate is moon.
Yeah, so you would have different extra zodiacal constellations associated. You would have, you know, let's just assume you're moving in a normal counterclockwise manner and have reversed the wheel. So Lepus the hare is going to be the first decanate. And let's see, which one is Sirius is the final decanate, isn't it? Yes. And Procyon, isn't it, is the middle decanate, the lesser dog and the greater dog. I believe that's true. So, you know, we have to find, see, if we were moving backwards and you were not on the reverse wheel, and by the reverse wheel, I mean that the person is inspiring or aspiring towards a higher spiritual position, then your first decanate would be your last decanate. Okay, you'd be moving backward through the sign. Procyon is the middle decanate, and that's the eager aspirant, the way Bailey explains it. There's a certain always sense of go ahead and rush and get there with Procyon. It's the one who looks ahead. And what is found in Procyon? Is it the sun?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's the second decanate. And then it's the moon found in the Sirius decanate, isn't it? So the decanate of the greater dog, we might say. And what we'd have to do there is look for what is the veiled ruler of the moon. Is it going to be Vulcan? Is it going to be Neptune? Is it going to be Uranus? Now, DK seems to imply that as we move on through evolution, that we progress from Vulcan, to which is physical, etheric, to Neptune, which is emotional, to Uranus, which is occult mind. So in this particular case, it's not just the fact that the moon is in Gemini and we'd have to say, oh, let instability do its work. But that is countermanded by the fact that you have so much seventh ray. And then we begin to look at what is that moon veiling. And probably, you know, while you do have a lot of Vulcan abilities, you know, as the builder, it's probably connected with Uranus and with occult mind. That's the way you would look at it. Let's just say that coming from Sirius, there are three planets that, well, there's a planet called Isis out there. It's a hypothetical planet, and it probably does exist. But the three synthesizing planets also exist and transmit the Sirian energy to the Earth. We have the karmic equation under Saturn. We have the sensitivity equation under Neptune, and we have the aspect of freedom and liberation through occult mind under Uranus. So, you know, once we get into a person's actual chart, we have to become a little more specific. But the whole idea, though, that you've got three things going, all in Gemini, we move from instability or variability to intelligence until finally we have really the interplay of spirit and matter, the interplay of the pairs of opposites. In other words, soul and personality are in a dialogue and mutually responsive, and eventually the monad gets into the act. And that's not even considering the decanates, that's just considering the three different levels of interpreting Gemini. Now, you probably looked here, I dare say, on page 332, and I serve myself. That could be considered the moon relation. Just in general, I'm not talking about decanates now. I serve my brother, eventually, the sun sign idea of soul-infused personalities working with each other. And finally, the true initiate, I serve the one. And that would be more indicated by the rising sign and maybe the point opposite the rising sign. So it gets into a degree of complexity, especially when you have all the same sign. And there must be a reason for it. I mean, you know, the soul choosing every one of the major indicators, sun, moon, and rising sign, in the same sign. If the soul is really behind that, there's only a couple of hours, a few hours every year when such a person can be born. Okay.
And we do have from Marianne, sun in Libra, moon in Leo, and Scorpio ascendant.
Okay, well, that moon in Leo immediately tells us that we're coming from a position, if we give into it, of self-emphasis, in which we have not achieved decentralization. We are quite centralized in our own feelings and responses, and the personality looms overly large. But Libra is very interesting because whereas the sun rules Leo, what is the case with Libra? And in Libra, the sun falls. It is the position of the fall because Aries is the exaltation. So, you know, oftentimes with this combination, there is a kind of reversal going on from personality emphasis into an emphasis on altruism and right relations, in which the normally egotistical Leo indicator, when it's lower, is sacrificed to the sense of right relations in Libra. However, the soul, it appears, was not entirely happy leaving it there, and so helped you, or whoever has this combination, make a decision that would tip the scales towards a more drastic soul direction, which is more sacrificial, less pleasant, less agreeable, more demanding, and in which, although you have achieved kind of an altruistic balance, forces you to deal with the heads of the Hydra, not necessarily all of them, but to make a conquest of one or more of the heads of the Hydra. Now, whichever one that might be for you, whether on the physical, emotional, or mental levels, you know, you would have to determine. But the drastic experience of Scorpio follows on from the equilibrized, harmonious position of Libra, which has overcome the more self-centered position of the moon. Now, of course, we can go back to that moon and we can say, we can look at it in a positive sense and say, well, maybe it veils Vulcan, maybe it veils Neptune, maybe it veils Uranus. And we'd have to look for the justifications for the transformation of the lunar nature. In other words, we start with the prison of the soul. Everybody's got a prison. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have a prison. And we start with the prison. We go to the overcoming of the prison through personality integration. And we go to the overcoming of the personality through soul direction. And then we go back to the prison and see if we can transform it so the lunar vehicles will carry more and more of the spiritual energy. I know some people who move from Libra to Scorpio. It's difficult for them because they've achieved something of a balance, and it's agreeable, and it's along the line of right relations, which we all want to achieve. But then they're plunged into inner warfare under Scorpio, and they actually have to deal with one or more of the heads of the Hydra. You can't escape that death experience to one of one's vices or faults. We all have them. And when we're made to follow the Scorpionic way of life, we have to deal with those obstructions until we gain such a humility that we can, in fact, kneel and prepare for the Capricorn experience. Now, remember, the Leo moon on its own level is not a humble position. It can be a wonderful, expressive, spontaneous place, and there are many good things to say about it, including warmth of heart and all the rest, but it is not humility. Humility is coming with Libra, which is a right sense of proportion, an adjusted sense of right proportion, and also coming with being forced to kneel and lift the Hydra above one's head into the air of the intuition. So let's just say if you get through the Scorpio experience, that a greater degree of humility will have been achieved, and a higher unity. Here it is under Scorpio, page 333. It may not be an obvious outer battle, but it's definitely an inner one. Okay.
What else? And then we have Stacia with the moon in Sagittarius, the sun also in Sagittarius, and a Leo ascendant.
Whoa, okay. Obviously the problem with the moon in Sagittarius, it's spontaneously ready to just get up and go somewhere and, have a respond with spontaneity. It's a potentially reckless position where we take chances, where we take risks maybe that we shouldn't be taking if we were more careful. But then when it moves into the sun position, the forces become much more directed under the will. So one knows where one is really going with it. One takes these sort of random impulses, which can, the whole idea of jumping on one's horse and riding off in all directions. It takes the carelessness away from the moon in Sag, and it really directs it towards a goal. And then finally, when Leo becomes the ascendant, the whole heart development, not the egotistical development, but the heart development becomes very, very strong. And a person really achieves that kind of warm radiation, which uplifts others and somehow shares life with others. So if the radiation really begins to increase, and therefore people begin to feel, good in one's presence because the heart energy is really connected. Then we, may circle back to the moon in Sag and say, well, what's being, what was the prison house of the soul, you know, and oftentimes with Sagittarius, it has to do with spontaneity to the point of recklessness. But now something different will come in under Vulcan. I would say in your case, maybe under Neptune is very strong. Neptune and giving way to Uranus, but Neptune for sure, I would say, because you seem to have that, you know, spontaneous feeling for people. Of course, it's cheating a little bit. I know you a little bit, see? So, but it's a lot of fire. And instead of the egotism of it, there is the real service aspect of Leo. We're told that heights of service are reached in the sign, not only Aquarius, but in Leo as well. So the expansion of soul consciousness in radiation and given forth generously, may I say, you know, because the inner generosity of the radiation is a thing that you have distinguished yourself for, and it is appropriate in this particular case. We can be generous in our radiating radiating heart energy, soul energy, which stimulates the very same thing in other people. Now, this is not really to say, you know, we're looking at your entire horoscope. There are other issues for all of us, but I'm just talking about the general trend. Now, friends, I'll tell you what, I'm not really going to go further with this at this time. How many more people are there? Because just hang on, we'll continue to do this, okay? We will continue. It will only be reasonably satisfactory because we're not really doing your whole chart. And of course, everybody wants to know something definitive about their home chart, whole chart. I'm just giving you trends. That's all. And the trend will depend upon the level of evolution at which you find yourself. And I assume that we all find ourselves at the level of aspiration at the very least. And some of us, let's just say, are really committed to mentally controlled disciplic service. And of course, we'd have to combine our rays with any reading of these triangles. Yes, Michael, you were going to say, sorry. Go ahead.
Mary Ann said, thank you. And I'm putting a couple of things in the chat box for some upcoming events.
Okay, very good. And like I say, every time we meet on this science of triangles, we'll try to look at a trend from the moon sign to the sun sign to the rising sign. And eventually, if we want to take it further into another triangle, we will look at the trend that takes us to the point opposite the sun sign. That's assuming that we know what the monad is all about and have any kind of experience with it at all. Now, and you know, the kind of group meeting that is meant to take us more into that identificatory state of the monad is the identify as being work. There we are trying actually to say, well, what is this strange state of being and consciousness, strange to us usually, that that so few have achieved, and maybe we can have a little glimmer of what it's like to achieve that, and then use the sign opposite the sun sign to indicate how that type of identification, that type of oneness, can enter into the life, along what path oneness can enter into the life. That would be our subject when we look at the point opposite the sun sign. So there are different triangles involved, and of course, one of the most practical is moon, sun sign, rising sign. Okay. Tuya and I just, we have a lot to do today. So we have to guard the time very carefully, and we could go on for hours, of course, and looking at exactly this triangle. But it's somehow it's very important for each one of us to know what this particular triangle can mean in our life. We have to meditate on that, because it gives an outline regarding movement forward, out of prison into liberation, out of prison and into liberation, which the rising sign will indicate, and even more, which the point opposite the sun will indicate when the time is right. And it's not necessarily right just because we want it to be right. You know, it takes a long time to get there, to the point where the point opposite the sun sign has a monadic meaning. It always has a balancing meaning. In other words, if we have the sun in a certain sign, then we have to balance that by the opposite, lest we run away with ourselves. We have to be cognizant of what it would mean to balance our sun sign. Now, that's one way of looking at it. But for the sun to represent the monad, that is another and different thing. And we, first of all, have to have a sense of what that monadic awareness really is, even in the slightest way. We have to have that sense. Okay. So, friends, go ahead, Michael. Did you have?
Yeah. Just want to let people know again about the registration links that I put in the chat box. And tomorrow, there's that special program on the new moon.
Yeah, what time did I say I started at? 10 o'clock?
10 a.m. GMT.
Okay. And then in the evening at 6 p.m., isn't it, GMT?
Yes, 6 p.m. GMT for the Esoteric United Nations group meeting. Yeah. For those who have already made their pledge, there won't be any pledging being done at this meeting.
Yeah, unless it seems that it somehow spontaneously, I'll pretend I have a Sagittarius moon, unless it's somehow spontaneously right that we do that. It just depends on who shows up. Anyway, the door is still open for that, friends, to consider the soul nature and the personality and nature of the various nations, and try to evoke the soul of these nations within the general soul of humanity. It's an ongoing project. And the nations are just getting to the point now, and I don't think they have been so much in the past, where they can become disciples. In other words, a nation can become an aspirant or a disciple. If it really wants to bring out its higher qualities. And what we're trying to do is help that happen, you know, in an esoteric manner. So, Michael, the connection is there. The link is there, right? So just copy what's in the chat box, everybody. Just copy it, throw it into a Word doc, and then, you know, you'll be able to join us, number one, for the kind of a new moon meditation, and number two, if you are interested in the Esoteric United Nations. And we do have some people doing some great work assembling knowledge concerning these various nations. If you want to join us in that, then you're welcome to do that. But you probably would have to continue, you would have to take that pledge, which takes us all the way into the next new group of World Servers Festival from the 21st to the 28th of December, 2026. So it is a commitment, and you'd have to think about that. Okay, let's have the great invocation. And all I have to do is find it. All right. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everyone. Tonight we have triangles at 5 p.m. And it will be the broadcast, our usual YouTube broadcast link. And, you know, that's more applying all of this to our network of triangles and to whatever triangles we have formed than tomorrow morning we'll have the identification as being, and I think tomorrow night, reappearance of the Christ, and then on Friday morning, cosmic fire in depth, and then in the evening, at least here in Europe, we will have the glamour, dissipation of glamour work, and so forth, and we will go on with it. Thank you for being here, and thank you, communications team, Joe and Michael and Tuya here, and appreciating your help and presence. So that's it for the moment, and we'll be seeing you when we next see you. Okay. Bye-bye.